When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What time is it, kids? It's time for the NXT review. I'm Willie Wilborn. He's Amy Hampler. We're here for the NXT. Lol. April Fools. Imagine if I actually started like that. Hello and welcome to the Wednesday Night War review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Deadly Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture. Sidgwick's finally had enough and just can't review NXT anymore. No, unfortunately, he is busy writing the ups and downs article for AEW Dynamite for the website because Andy Murray apparently needs a sodding 5-day weekend. Anyway, we are here to review NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT, and if you want to know our thoughts on AEW Dynamite, that is available as a podcast probably this afternoon. It's a bit all over the place in the What Culture office today. We also review Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett to review NXT. It's a bit manic today, isn't it? Because I love the fact that we've got a four-day weekend for Easter Hamflett, but it's not exactly nice and quiet just beforehand, especially as we're on the road to WrestleMania, eh?
It's not followed an ideal time, should we say, if you are indeed a believer or have any sort of Christian faith about Easter weekend and all that sort of stuff. Maybe have your Christ rise on a different weekend to the one before WrestleMania and when NXT is about to move to Tuesdays. Please, thank you, if that's your thing. No judgment. Listen, I was keen for a surprise on NXT this week. I didn't get one. So thank you for briefing me in advance. Oh, yeah, I'm like my funny little April Fool's intro. And then still surprising me by going as low as you did with, I'm Willie Wilborn! truly, you are the April Fool 365 days a year, and I wouldn't have you any other way. And nice to get that sense of spark and magic and excitement, because short of something I can't wait to get to and talk about with you, NXT went out of the Wednesday Night War with something of a whimper, didn't it? This NXT was a functional go-home show to take over, I think. There was a couple of things that I genuinely liked in terms of getting us to take over, stand and deliver. But even in the information that NXT will air also on Peacock next week, as well as on Wednesday, they've willfully scorched next Wednesday's TV audience, much like they've spent the last 18 months or so accidentally doing it on USA Network. So, in a way, this was kind of a fitting end to this era.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed NXT. I don't know whether it's because I watched Dynamite and that return of Sue and Trent and Chris Statlander left me with such a warm, fuzzy feeling. That I was just in a good mood, or the fact that certainly whenever I have to wake up early, and let alone whether it's for this or any other occasion, I'm very much a night owl rather than a early worm. That's not the word, Adam. Early bird. That's the one I'm looking for.
Early worm, the early bird. It's the NXT review.
But I sometimes have to do that negotiation thing with myself where I go like, okay, I know it's early, Adam, but if you do this, you can go to bed early or, you know, whatever. I think the knowledge of like,
come on, you've only got this and one more early wake up before you have to stop watching these two shows back to back.
I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good sell for Takeover Stand and Deliver. And I think it was helped by the start of this show. It started with Cameron Grimes versus Roderick Strong. Before that, though, Cameron Grimes still wasn't finished, despite being chinned by Strong last week with the pitch of taking over the intellectual property of Undisputed Era. This time, he brought stuff with him. He had a T-shirt which said Grimes the System, and he had a new theme song that did the same. He is the beacon of hope on NXT, isn't he? And I know I'm biased, but even you must admit, he's what you need on NXT, Cameron Grimes.
Love this. Absolutely love this. Wanted a Grimes. Grimes the System. Like, love that T-shirt. Should have had music made that said "Game Stop the System" or something along those lines as well.
I thought he should have gone fully in, done the entrance, and on the classic Adam Cole thumb at self bit, just gone moon.
Very good. See, look, the jokes have already written themselves, which is good because NXT only did about half of them. I like this. Earnestly, I like this. I guess what I can say positively about this, more than just that we have a good laugh at Cameron Grimes and all that sort of stuff, is that I really, really appreciated the finish of this match. Like, hugely appreciated the finish. I like this in terms of how I'm supposed to feel about the collapse of the Undisputed Era more than I've liked anything when it's been brought up in the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly feud. Honestly, like, I wanted so much to, like, mourn the loss of the stable. And I don't feel like the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly feud has permitted me to do that. Mm. It's instead become about intense rivalries and friendships cast asunder and all this sort of stuff. Roddy Strong is a sad guy on the side that has just watched what he thought was a pretty stable unit fall to pieces. Like, if anything, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, I think I want to hear from Bobby Fish on issues strictly related to the Undisputed Era and absolutely nothing else ever. But I think I want to hear from Bobby Fish. And this finish fed into that. Like, they haven't completely abandoned a beloved act for the sake of intense, unsanctioned action. They've abandoned it for the broken hearts of other wrestlers affected by it. And I was all for that. Good match, too.
Yeah, this is the thing, is as much as I, you know, have a laugh and really enjoy the lighthearted nature of Cameron Grimes and the fun that he brings to NXT, he's also a really, really good professional wrestler, which often gets missed. And I feel like this exemplified it, working with someone like Roderick Strong, who we always say is just spectacular between the ropes as well. Strong was, for the most part of this match, was just getting a lot of his frustrations out of Cameron Grimes. It started the moment Grimes thought it was a good idea to play Grimes the System. He jumped out of the ring, he attacked him before the bell even rang. And there was a moment when they're brawling outside. Again, a couple of nice touches, as you alluded to. They're brawling outside, and there's just a guy with slightly long hair, but mainly an Undisputed Era T-shirt, stood behind the plexiglass in the crowd. That distracts Roderick Strong, who has a bit of, like, NAMM flashbacks, and that allows Cameron Grimes to hoy him into the strut for the lighting grid thing. There's a superplex spot, which Grimes kicks out at two from. Grimes cuts off Strong with that mint Spanish fly crossbody thing that he does. And then he goes to get out what we assume is going to be some foreign object, brass knucks and the like. Goes to hit Strong with it. Strong avoids it and nails Cameron Grimes. But in the process of that, Grimes drops it. And you think, oh, right, what is it? Is it going to be, you know, like a roll of quarters or something he was trying to chin him with? And it was, in fact, an Undisputed Era armband. And all the memories and all the emotions come flooding back to Roderick Strong. He's no longer in a wrestling match with Cameron Grimes. He's thinking back to the history of this stable and where it all went wrong. In the midst of all that, what's the worst thing that can happen whilst you're having a little moment to yourself? Probably someone double footing you in the chest. Cameron Grimes nails him with the cave in. 1, 2, 3. Maybe this is why I was so high on NXT, because it started and within 15 minutes, my favourite wrestler on NXT had won. So there you go.
Like, don't underestimate the importance of that win for Cameron Grimes, because they were risking taking a character that they'd done a really good job to sort of rebadge and refit at the last takeover. And doing away with some of the momentum. The first couple of DiBiase vignettes and skits were good fun, but it didn't feel like there was much momentum behind the character, and this restored a lot of that in a really enjoyable way. And the messaging was clear after the fact. The Undisputed Era smells of dick now. That's what we're led to believe. No, Strong with the Narm flashbacks. I loved Strong's, like, just the violence that he was permitted to unleash on Grimes, like the drop kick and those, like, horrendous chops, because Grimes had earned it over the course of, like, basically one vignette last week and his entrance this week. Big fan of all that. This really worked. Really, really enjoyed this. As just to sort of reiterate, I want the Undisputed Era to be mourned like this rather than in intense video packages and in the Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole stuff.
Well, you mentioned video packages. One came next for Karrion Kross, of course, ahead of his NXT Championship match with Finn Balor. And I like this as well, because, you know what I liked? Is take all the spooky bollocks. We've got that to come, don't worry. Take all the spooky bollocks, all the tarot cards and the fireballs, put it all to one side, put that all in a bin, throw it away, right? And just remind everyone, Karrion Kross is a really hard bastard. You just watched him train and you were like, yeah, Finn Balor's buggered, let alone all the mind games, etc. with Scarlett. She's with him. She says, look at him. You look at him. He's hoying stuff around. He's punching pads or whatever it is. And you think, I love you, Finn Balor, but this is like stepping in the ring with a heavyweight when you're a bloody featherweight, isn't it?
Absolutely. We've kind of alluded to this in prior weeks. This Karrion Kross was probably the Karrion Kross to pitch for this takeover match, which is interesting considering that we probably all would have fantasy booked Flaming Contract Guy versus the Demon once upon a time.
Yes.
By the time we've actually arrived at the match, it doesn't really feel like the way to go. I think ultimately Karrion Kross getting injured and having to hand over the title humanized him more than we realized. And it kind of, it's really hard to do that emerging from hell gimmick when you emerge from hell with your arm in a sling. Mm. So this has shown, obviously his recovery has been shown by class Instagram gym selfies. And then this is like the video equivalent, you know, he's got his figurative claws out and made Finn Balor pause, P-A-W-S, for thought ahead of this big match. He's actually made him stop and just look at what he's got to deal with. You know, you can ask bigger questions about the characterization slightly of Scarlett. Is she enigmatic, or are they just taking a piss a little bit with how she almost changes shape based on the needs of the Karrion Kross character and the particular storyline? I'm not particularly sure I know who Scarlett is. Mm. Like, is there magic powers still within this couple, or like, is she like the serious, like, gym goer that Karrion Kross is? I don't know, but I'm into the match enough, I guess.
We sort of predicted this on the preview yesterday. This is a show with a great deal of video package, understandably, when you've got two effectively pay-per-view nights to come next week for NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver. And we got another one with Walter just saying, I'm bloody Ronnie Pickering. I'm going to destroy Tommaso Ciampa. I've held this NXT UK championship longer than anyone else. And night one of TakeOver, I'm probably going to murder Tommaso Ciampa. I didn't need selling any more on this match. And yet this, and then the later promo from Tommaso Ciampa somehow made me even more excited.
Yeah. These were good. These were good. I've got to be objective there. What this and the Ciampa ones lacked, if I'm being brutally honest, was any belief that I was sold that Ciampa can win.
Mm.
Walter's held that belt for a long time. You could argue that he's a bit of a paper champion because the defenses really don't stack up to the amount of days he's had it. And I didn't, like, promos still short for promotion, and you're still supposed to promote the fight. And I thought this did an effective job of promoting the fight, but didn't at any point leave me with any feeling of suspense around the outcome. And I wonder if I
acknowledge it a similar way to Kross versus Ciampa. I was just like, well, he's a lamb to the slaughter here.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. And I don't know. I don't know if this needs the psychology of thinking that Ciampa might actually be able to get this done. rather than just feeling like Walter's comeback feud. I think it undermines the match. I'm still looking forward to the match, of course I am. And I think these promos were effective in reminding you just who Walter and Ciampa were. I don't know. I don't know if there was a better way to promote this. It felt like they were so focused on getting absolutely everything nailed on for TakeOver that they probably felt there was no story left to tell. It's probably a subjective one for me there. They're going to have to work incredibly hard to make me think that Ciampa's actually got a chance of winning the belt.
Yeah, I still think that when he hits the... Is it the Willows bell now after his daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Whenever if he hits that next Wednesday, I'll still bite on the two count probably. But I also like the fact that he's not going in there. Well, he did in his promo, but he's not sold me going in there going, I'm going to take this championship away from you. He just said, I'm going to have to fight you. What I got from this, and maybe it's just me, you know, reading between the lines and giving NXT more credit than they deserve, was, yeah, I'm probably going to lose, but I have to fight you because the less so just because of the necklace thing, but also just because bollocks to you, let's have it out sort of thing.
I think that's fair as well. I think, you know, I guess we're covering the champ on now as well, aren't we? I think that's a perfectly fair promo to cut. I'm reminded of John Moxley doing the let's rap, guys, when he put the chair backwards and he kind of did that last pitch for what he thinks will happen in the Kenny Omega match, even if he's not going to win it, you know, before the botch, I guess, of the explosion. He was kind of teeing us up to think this is going to be so bad that I might not come out with this on top. I think there's definitely room for those types of promos. So I don't particularly hold it against either of them, especially like Ciampa here for saying, yep, yeah, I might be just facing imminent death here, but like support my bravery in facing it in the first place. You know, there's room for that sort of stuff. There really was. It was all well delivered. I think I was thirsting maybe for something to make me a bit of a believer. Maybe you're right. Maybe it'll come in the middle of the match itself. I'm certainly bang up for the match. The fact that we didn't have the on-stage face-to-faces to end the show helped immensely. Yeah. Shocker, I know, but helped immensely because I want to see these two come nose-to-nose for the first time. And they've not just given that away on a stage 7 days earlier.
Yeah, hot take. Tommaso Ciampa is a good promo. Pass it on. Like the passion that came from it. And maybe, do you know what I've realized? I forgot to mention is him saying he's taking on board the accusations of, oh, he's changed. This isn't the Tommaso Ciampa from a few years ago, clutch titles. And that was almost the part of it that I thought that he was saying, oh, I'm going to take this NXT UK championship from you. But this wasn't a thing where, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's a very prestigious title in terms of, you think of how many people have actually held it. But it's, you know, that's a good question for another day. But this is the be all and end all is not Tommaso Ciampa becoming NXT UK champion. It's him having a fight with someone because of the passion that's burning through him for whether it be Thatcher or just his inherent hatred of Walter or the necklace stuff. I don't know. But I bought it and I really liked it. And like you say, it was a match that didn't need any more selling. And I doubt that they could have instilled the thought in many people that Ciampa might win this. So I just appreciated the real passion that came across in Ciampa's promo later on. But after the Walter vignette, we had a promo in ring from Santos Escobar. He issued an open challenge, talked about being the greatest cruiserweight ever, buried Jordan Devlin. Of course, he's going to face him in a ladder match at TakeOver. And Tyler Breeze answered the open challenge and, got his arse handed to him, basically. Yes, he got some decent offense. I love Tyler Breeze. Got some decent offense in. Got a sharpshooter on Santos Escobar. Escobar, though, got a rope break, came back. Phantom driver, 1, 2, 3. But this was all means, I thought it was quite a clever means to an end of not only putting the Cruiserweight Championship match over, but also the tag team match we've got to come as well, because Legado del Fantasma, of course, a part of Santos Escobar, as his group. They go to attack Breeze after the bell. MSK are back. They return. They make the save. And then the team who should become tag team champions next week, the grizzled young veterans appear on the screen and basically say, yeah, you two can have a fight and we'll just leave as tag team champions, as they should, Michael Hamflett.
Yeah. This was better than the sum of its parts, I think. I don't think the Escobar promo on Devlin was particularly interesting. I don't think Tyler Breeze saying, doing this sort of this business, working my ass off to be here stuff is believable in 2021. Like, working your ass off to be where? Like, on the main roster losing, or in the Capital Wrestling Center losing? Like, is it even worth working your ass off for any of that? I thought the match was too basic for its own good.
Yeah.
And then I thought that, like, all of the parade of run-ins to get to your, you know, it was a good promo, the video war promo, and MSK looked strong, but that kind of like parade of run-ins ending was all just a bit contrived and a bit lazy. So as an end-to-end bit of television, it did well in functioning to promote two separate matches that featured, you know, the Legado del Fantasma group. But I don't think I enjoyed any of it, you know? Maybe that's a lot of NXT in a nutshell. None of it was particularly interesting, but they sold me on things stubbornly I kind of want to watch. You know, like, it just, none of them on their own, I think, would stand up. As like, the match wasn't interesting enough. The promos weren't so great that you'd remember them or think to yourself, I'm going to give that another spin on YouTube later on. None of that, just absolutely none of it. But two matches got built over 15 minutes. So, like, passing grade, tick in the box, I think.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Backstage, Johnny Gargano was still furious about this. It couldn't be simpler. Gauntlet thing that we'll get to for a shot at the NXT North American Championship. The way are there. Austin Theory's there. Do you know what? I love this story throughout this show. I really liked it. Austin Theory going, you heard of the finger poke of doom? And Gargano went, yeah, killed the business. And then he realized what Theory was implying. And he went, kill the business. But it's all right by me, effectively. And I for the issues people have with Austin Theory, which I completely understand, and we're not going to get into, of course, I thought the bit in the actual Battle Royal just tickled me, and I don't know why. We'll get to it in due course. But what do you think of this promo anyway? Johnny Gargano can make almost anything entertaining, can't he?
Yeah, I thought he was in pretty good form here. I quite enjoyed the way this week in general. They don't hit every week anymore, but they hit this week. Candice LeRae is an amazing reaction actor, especially with Gargano, and that shouldn't be a shock, I guess. But she's so funny. React like she's the best audience for Gargano's nonsense, I think.
Yes,
because she sells how stupid it is while then trying to protect his fragile male ego, and I just think that there's a lot of truth to that anyway. of like the unfortunate role of women in wrestling in general is often to protect male egos. And I just buy it so much. However, old wrestling promotion 101, if you're going to tell the audience something, you best show them it. If you're going to talk about the finger poke of doom on goddamn NXT, you better present Kevin Nash at Stand and Deliver. That's all I'm saying. Like, you're bringing friggin' Hogan to WrestleMania. He's the other half of this. So you better bring Kevin Nash to win the North American title with the finger poke.
Right, we're going to group all of these things together in one segment because the first time I saw that, I thought, oh God, I need to get some more sleep here. I've just seen a dog run across an NXT sign as a tease for a debut.
He's now, only dog.
We had, what's his name? Prince Presley, I think.
Presley, I think, yeah. I don't know. So I apologise that I haven't been looking at a dog's Instagram to get the correct name for this review.
Basically, there was a dog running about NXT for quite a few segments. And it ran up to some... There was a lot of these, and then it eventually was running through the Performance Center, eventually ran up to a set of legs wearing some long heels, boots or what have you, and it said, "See you April 18th, Frankie," which is Frankie Monet, if you know your WWE trademarks, basically, which is Taya Valkyrie. She's going to be a fantastic addition to NXT.
Yeah, superb. I don't give a about dogs in wrestling, full stop. I don't need puppy battle royals. I don't need dog vignettes. I don't need Pharaoh getting frightened by Pyro.
None of that.
Don't need it. Don't need the indulgence of wrestlers, dogs, and Instagrams. However, what I very much welcome is Taya Valkyrie into this women's division. It is a good time for her to be debuting that first Tuesday after TakeOver, the first Tuesday of NXT being on Tuesdays. I think it would be unfair to put the pressure on her to try and draw a big number, especially in the nature of this video package. I think that, yes, we can. This is one of those rare occasions where, as fans, we can actually put two and two together and make four. It is Taya Valkyrie. This is not speculation. We've seen the trademark. We've seen the dog. It is her. So they can pitch her as arriving. How many people will have seen much of her work from Impact? I don't know. Like, a record-smashing knockouts champion that she was. There's lots to go and see from her to know what you're getting. But in this division in particular, that could look a lot different in a week's time. I think that was my biggest takeaway, was that she's going to walk into a women's division that might potentially have a new set of tag champions, a new singles champion, the outgoing singles champion perhaps no longer even part of the brand. And we're going to get to an act shortly. An actor that looks set to probably dominate the landscape in the near future. I think that's a pretty cool time to be making your debut. I think it's going to look like quite a nice fresh coat of paint. And I think it feels, you know what it actually feels like? It feels like something WWE don't do enough of anymore, which is that kind of post-WrestleMania push.
Exactly.
That like energized new face that you're just really desperate to see. So I think they've timed this one out perfectly. And like the teaser vignettes are what they are. They're fine. I got no opinion. Like, all dog crack aside, I've got kind of no opinion about the presentation of it. It's always better to do something than nothing.
Yeah, and I have to say, this is very different to like Rhea Ripley on Raw, where they're like, oh my God, please come in and save this women's division. We don't know what we're doing with it. She's coming in to, like you say, whether it is completely different from what it is right now in 2 weeks, it is still stacked. And you can reel off name after name after name that you can, I can't wait to see. Frankie Monet, I'm just going to call her Taya Valkyrie for the time being, because that's the name that appears in my head. But yeah, that's going to be really good. And I'm excited to see what they do with her, because like you say, she was so dominant in Impact Wrestling and she's just so talented, and excited to see where they go next. In terms of other females within the division, we had Candice LeRae and Indi Hartwell next. They took on Gigi Dolin and Zayda Ramia, I want to say. It's a Booker T trainee who's been given a new name. And it was a relatively straightforward match to set up another match for NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver. Candice LeRae hit the Wicked Stepsister, flying elbow drop. Gigi Dolin, of course, formed Priscilla Kelly. And Hartwell pinned Ramia, apologies, to win the match. most importantly, what happened was post-match, though, Lerae cut a promo and challenged the NXT Women's Tag Team Champions Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart to a match at TakeOver next week. They came out on the tank. They were pissed off and they fired something at Indy Hartwell from the cannon and accepted the challenge. If Sidgwick was here, he would moan about the fact that we've seen this previously. I don't really care. I think these four work really well together.
Yeah, I'm probably somewhere in the middle of both those opinions, actually. I've not got a huge amount of love for this Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon team at the moment. I think my pop is quite guilty when they fire something out of that tank.
Yeah.
I do enjoy it. I really do. But I sort of like, after the fact, I kind of feel like I need to go and take a shower. So, oh, right, should I really be giving them the benefit of the doubt? It's a bit... ooh. Like, it's a toy tank, isn't it? It's a toy tank firing toys. Like, my kids do that at each other. I wouldn't expect to have to try and sell a pay-per-view match off the back of it. This was fine. They shouldn't have made these belts. No. Somebody on NXT should have beaten Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler.
Yep.
That's what should have happened. These belts are superfluous. But they've got them, and these are the only credible opponents right now. I liked Candice because I love Indy Hartwell in the way, because she's such a willing victim, I guess, or a willing sort of sidekick, that Candice's whole point was that there's not a woman that deserves to be champion more than me, more than it was we should be the tag team champions.
Yes.
So I like the fact that she's kind of planting seeds that she wants another run at whomever's going to be women's champion, which will be great if and when Raquel Gonzalez turns babyface. How class is that match going to be? So I like her saying that and then kind of dragging Hartwell along to be like, well, let's just take the tag titles in the meantime. I hope they win. I hope the way win the belts. I think this Ember and Shotzi team was better for like a moment on night one. You know, and I didn't even like the moment, but it's a very, very WWE capital M moment. Oh, we've got champions. Here they are. They've been handed the belts. Oh, some babyfaces have won them. I didn't think that made anybody look good. Mm. But WWE love doing stuff like that. I'd put Lerae and Hartwell over at TakeOver. I don't think they will. I think they're probably with Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart for the long haul. But just personal taste, the way are such a fully fleshed out and like fully formed act that it's almost like, I don't want to drag the iconics here, Wilborn. But when they launched the women's tag belts and they elected not to go forward with proper champions, Sasha and Bayley, because they wanted to do a funny bit in putting the belts on the Iconics at WrestleMania, they then showed their hand by never making them credible. And it wasn't until, was it Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross or the Kabuki Warriors that won the belts? I forget which team, but either way, that was the first point at which the belts became credible. I feel like we're still in the novelty era of the belts, these NXT women's tag belts. And I wonder if the Way might be the first team to have them and keep them for a long, sustained period.
Plus, there's a lot of stuff to be mined out of Candice and Indy being champions. And if they're going to do this, I'm not suggesting that they'll do it immediately or at TakeOver or whatever. Johnny Gargano isn't a champion. Let's just say in the Gargano household that would cause. You mentioned Raquel Gonzalez there. We'll talk more about her in a bit because this was the first of many brawls between Raquel Gonzalez and the NXT Women's Champion, Io Shirai. This one, she just attacked Io Shirai backstage. I'll get to the good stuff on this because there was one bit of this attack later on that I was like, oh, good, Raquel. More importantly, though, Roderick Strong was leaving. What? We've got a 12-man battle royal. It couldn't be simpler. You're ruining this, Roddy. He was leaving. He was furious, or just upset, really, more than furious, I suppose, regarding what happened with Cameron Grimes and the Undisputed Era. And he said, he is done. He is done with it all. Roderick Strong quits? Michael, come on.
I'd like him to show his hand at TakeOver. I'd like him to be part of this unsanctioned thing. He's been... What's great about the Roddy Strong arm of this this Undisputed Era breakup is that both Cole and O'Reilly have cast him aside in different ways. Cole was physical and cruel. Kyle O'Reilly was just a bit too self-absorbed and a bit too obsessed with getting revenge that he was like, it's not about you, you know, all that sort of stuff. But they both cast him aside. I'm way more fascinated about, like, I was going to say the dog in the fight that Roderick Strong has got, but we've already had enough dog content on this podcast. I'm way more interested to, like, again, it's a bit like, oh, I want to hear from Bobby Fish. You know what I would do? You know, if you could just, if I had the keys, if I had the pencil, if Triple H gave me a call and said, listen, Road Dog's out about 6 weeks. We just need an ideas, man. And we've heard you on the podcast. We've stolen enough from you, so we want to start paying you for it. I'd have Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish take up the managerial services of Pat McAfee. That's what I do. Pat's tag team are out. Pete Dunne's gone single, gone solo. I'd have big money Pat get in the ear of Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish. Like, look, I fucking told you about this Adam Cole guy. And now look what it's also done to the spiraling ego of your other mate. That's what I do.
I love that. Yeah, that's great. Speaking of managers, whilst I remember, if you haven't done so already, follow Malcolm Bivins on Twitter. It is well worth your time. There was a great thing he posted last night. He sort of pokes his head into the door of backstage of the training bit of the performance center. Priscilla Kelly's there, or whatever that we're calling her now. I'm so confused with everyone's new names. And he goes, psst, is Walter here? Have you seen Walter? Is Walter about? She went, no. And he goes, yeah, he better not be here. There's a noise in the background. He craps himself, but he's just, follow Malcolm Bivins on Twitter, just whilst I remember that, because he is the managerial Cameron Grimes, in my opinion. Oh, God, I've just now said that. I'm very excited, but that's not going to happen. Anyway, Raquel Gonzalez was in a very enjoyable match with Zoe Stark next. Zoe Stark getting a lot of exposure and a lot of offense and matches and showcasing over the last few weeks. Deservedly so. I thought she looked really good in here. Dakota Kai, of course, has wrestled her in the past. She tries to interfere, but Zoe Stark takes her out. Moonsault into a modified blockbuster, but then Gonzalez cuts her off. Powerbomb, 1, 2, 3. And the brawl continues. Io Shirai runs down to attack Raquel Gonzalez in a big back post-match. But this time, Shirai gets hoisted into the barricade. What did you think of the match, Hamlet?
Really liked it. Really, really liked it. The exact sort of thing I want out of my... And this is the difference, you know? This is the exact sort of thing I want from a go-home angle versus what we got with the cruiserweight stuff earlier.
Yes.
Like, this was far more creative because you've already established that Raquel Gonzalez and Io Shirai can no longer wait a week and they just, like, they can't be partnered. So you're having these fights going on backstage. That's now, like, they've done it before the match. So you've established that this is an ongoing thing. And the match, if anything, is kind of the last thing Gonzalez needs tonight because, like, she started a fight with Io Shirai that Io Shirai wants to finish. Like, so Zoe Stark, she can believably, for a couple of minutes, have her mind elsewhere, have her concentration elsewhere, and that opens the door for Zoe Stark to show that she is learning from working, not just with Raquel Gonzalez, but working in general. She's getting better. But Gonzalez is so great that it doesn't even take this sophisticated turnaround. It takes catching her and beating her, because that's how strong and dominant she is at the moment. Stark, like, I loved the big knee strikes. Really, really love this. Like, she's got it. She's got it. She's got it. Neck breaker. She's got nothing. She's beaten. She's dead. Like, I love that style of, it's like competitive squash, I guess, but I love that style of building up a contender, because it's just that reminder that that could have been Io Shirai. You know, Stark gave Io a hell of a fight a couple of weeks ago, and look what Raquel Gonzalez did to Stark when she was building momentum. You know, that's the psychology of a finish like that. I can just literally pick you up out of midair, slam you to the ground and beat you. And the fact that, yeah, like, it was just for 5 minutes or whatever it was, I just really appreciated the craft. And the fight that we got after the fact was great. Like, the physicality was absolutely brilliant. The best was yet to come, I think. Like, we're probably going to get to what I imagine, we haven't talked about this, but I imagine that our favourite spot was the same spot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to spoil the end of the show, the rarest of birds in NXT, they actually earned the end of show closing chaos.
Yeah.
It's never earned. It's always like, oh, it's just idiots punching each other. Because ironically, it's normally because they've got like a battle royal to build or something. But since they'd got that out of the way, I honestly thought they'd established that, wow, nothing can keep these two apart. And it actually earned the drama you had at the end of the night. What often feels so stupid and contrived in pro wrestling felt like a necessity because nothing could stop them.
And the fact that it's main event of night one, deservedly so, like you say, off the back of this. We had an interview with Kushida talking about the upcoming, couldn't be simpler, Battle Royal that was later on in the night. Pete Dunne approaches him. Pete Dunne confronts him about the fact that Kushida talks about being the best technical wrestler, and Pete Dunne thinks he's the best technical wrestler. They stare at each other. It builds to what was to come later on. And, shock horror, Michael Hamflett. Really good promo video, prime target, mini doc thing for Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. As much as bits of it we haven't been fans of, yet again, they can sell us on this because the prime targets that they create are just sensational.
Really good. Really, really good. Yeah, it's polishing a turd would be too harsh because this is not a turd of a storyline at all. But yeah, if you're critical of it and then you watch something like a prime target, you'll at least be on the hook for the end result. You'll at least be on the hook for the match itself. And I would say this was super effective. It was probably, in a way, like subjectively, this was probably the most effective thing on the whole show for me because it's the most I felt invested in Colin O'Reilly. The flashes to the Undisputed Era's best bits were really rewarding because it's even like an aesthetic. Those are the those are the Adam Coles and O'Reillys I want to look at. I don't even really want to look at the current incarnations of Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly with his big hair and his denim waistcoat, and Adam Cole as this sort of quasi Dwayne The Rock Johnson type figure. I want to look at them in the Undisputed Era because they were the characters I fell in love with or loved to hate in the first place. And yeah, these are brilliant. These are always really great. What's great about the prime targets are they all stand alone as like isolated pieces of work as well. So you can go back and watch them years later, completely free of context, and get a great deal of enjoyment out of them. And I dare say this one will be even better in that context than this one, because you're going to have forgotten a lot of what you watched week to week and just thought, God, yeah, this is gripping this. I think I might go and give that takeover match a look. Felt big time. I will give them that. It felt really, really big time.
I still remember towards the end of, I think it was 2019, must have been, where Dynamite beat NXT in the ratings and people went, yeah, well, of course it did. NXT was just like a clip show. And I was like, wasn't a clip show. It was like two episodes of Prime Target. I'd rather watch that than live wrestling, I think, maybe. So, yeah, they're always great. Go and watch the build to that.
It was, but I know the episode you're referring to, and it's like one of them, you know, them Twitter accounts are like pictures or sounds taken seconds before disaster.
Yeah.
The NXT you're referring to had an hour-long video package on Gargano versus Ciampa and why one final beat had to happen. And I couldn't have been more full of praise for it. I was like, wow, an hour of Gargano and Ciampa content. I am fired up for, hang on, what, another hour? No. I'm in video packages.
I quite like one final beat.
Get that on a t-shirt, man, honestly. Well, that's only going to get better with age, that phrase.
Yeah. Speaking of guilty pleasures, Kaden Carter and Casey Catanzaro versus Tian Sha. I am here for this, and I'm very glad that Michael Sidgwick probably isn't here for this part of the podcast because I dread to think what he'd say. But yeah, they came down, and I thought, oh my God, what? They're either going to do a mixed tag, which isn't going to happen because why would you just suddenly randomly have Boa come in there and kick Kaden Carter's head in? Or Mia Ying, I want to say. Is that the name of the 1,000-year-old Dragon Train lady?
I had a slightly different pronunciation because I wanted to do a gag and call this the Mia Ying Classic. So can we go with Mia Ying for the benefit of that gag? This is just this one week, and then we've got a week to get the pronunciation bang right, but then at least I've done this joke.
Regardless, Xia Li is great. She started the match on her own. She had that great entrance she always had. I don't know why, but I really like the bit where they zoom in on the 1,000-year-old undead person and there's no Xia Li and Boa, and then they zoom back out and they're there. And I realise that's just them stepping in, but I'm like, whoa, spooky! So Xia Li started off the match like a bloody handicap match and, got a bit of offense in. But at the end of the day, no matter how talented she is, the numbers game's always going to catch up to her. Although Kaden Carter went, no, I'm going to go and get a tag partner, walked up the ramp to this Mia Ying, confronts her. And I was thinking, oh my God, is she going to go down for the hot tag? What is she going to do? And she just grabbed Kaden Carter by the throat, choked the life out of her, and then KO'd her with what can only be described as magic smoke. And then in the ring, Xia Li hit Casey Catanzaro with a finisher and pinned her. Never mind all that. What happened with this? What happened with Kaden Carter?
Well, I'll tell you what's been happening. Mia Ying's been vaping, hasn't she? I've done them both now. I need to do them both. We're good. End the review. No, it was. It was weird. It was, but I quite liked it.
Yeah.
I don't want. We've talked about this. Mei Ying's character can't. I'm loath to make this comparison and have people misunderstand it here. It's a bit like when we joke about how, well, what's Randy Orton going to do? Slap on a chin lock on the Fiend. Mm. He's trying to set him on fire. These characters are so daft that if she'd have stood on the apron waiting for a tag, it wouldn't have done away with like months of work in a second. Because it's like, there she is holding on to the tag rope. Well, maybe I can get into the action and lock up. It had to be this, didn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it didn't have to be blowing smoke in her face. Maybe she could have done something more physical. Maybe she could have, like, you know, that move where like they snap people's necks and like it looks like the head's about to come separate from the shoulders or something. I don't know. Something physical that made her powers look beyond those of a mere mortal. Her powers look more akin to your commoner garden thousand-year-old ghost. But then maybe your commoner garden thousand-year-old ghost would blow smoke, fatal smoke. Maybe they would. Maybe this was... So we've got Bad Bunny at WrestleMania. We've got Logan Paul on SmackDown. Maybe now we've got the Smoke Monster from Lost on NXT. It's celebrity season, isn't it? You had to go daft. You had... this is not me. You know, I'd like to think people have listened to these enough podcasts now to know that this is not NXT shill crack. You had to go daft. It's really, really bloody stupid, and it can't last, and it can't survive in this guise for very long. But better this than her grabbing a hold, honestly.
Yes.
I cannot tell you how much stupider it would have looked. You might not think it, but if she'd have got in there, if she'd have waited for politely for a tag and then ran the ropes, then a drop down tackle leapfrog or something, that's deader than this. That's deader than Caden Carter looked when she got the smoke in the face.
And I suppose they couldn't do too much physicality because of what came next. Another bit of the backstage brawl between Io Shirai and Raquel Gonzalez, except this time Raquel Gonzalez, the one contender for the NXT Women's Championship, threw Io Shirai through a sodding wall.
Oh, this spot, man. Oh my god. And like, we talk about instincts and how WWE wrestlers too often have their expressive sides handcuffed by the creative process, not just Io going through that wall, gimmicked wall, who cares, but Raquel Gonzalez spotting like a Here's Johnny moment and clawing away at some of the rest of the wall to get ahead through there. You can't fake or create moments like that. You just have to see it and take it. Unbelievable. She gets it. She gets this feud. It's about a belt. It's about the most prestigious belt in NXT. Maybe about is it the most prestigious belt in all of WWE? It's got to be, hasn't it? NXT Women's title. There's no title more valuable than this one. Awesome. Just awesome. And again, if you're going to justify the mad, oh, we're out of time brawl on a show, it's with stuff like this. They earned that. This was great. This was so good.
Just loved it. Because I just thought, oh my God, I can't wait to see these two have a wrestling match. That's what this is there to do.
Yeah, sell me the fight. Sell me the fight.
We'll get to what happened at the end of the show in due course. This was the final moment of the dog introducing us to Taya Valkyrie and the Tommaso Ciampa promo. And then, Michael Hanfler, we got the Gauntlet Eliminator qualifying battle royal. And as my best friend Wade Barrett, Stu Bennett said, couldn't be simpler, which is why they had to have a full page of explaining this behind the two of them, him and Vic Joseph in the ring.
We got a YouTube explainer, basically, didn't we? You know, when the GameStop stuff actually happened and you're like, I'm going to have to work out how Cameron Grimes has made a load of money. I don't get this. And then you Google it and there's like, I think Cleary did one for our channel, maybe.
Yeah, it was really good, actually. I watched that, yeah.
It was like, let's get some information out there. NXT had to do one for a match. It's like they've taken to need to make explainers for William Regal's booking.
But there was 11 people, of course, because Roddy had left. And the eliminations went like this. Jake Atlas taken out first. Malcolm Bivens grabbing Atlas's foot to allow Swerve to kick him off the apron. Oh, prior to that, where Swerve was making his entrance, him and Leon Ruff started brawling.
And the only other person who got an entrance was Pete Dunne. But then, unfortunately for Malcolm Bivin, Tyler Rust was hoyed out, back dropped out by Swerve. Austin Theory, he gets knocked out of the ring, gets knocked over the top rope by Bronson Reed, falls out of the ring, but he doesn't fall on his feet. Both of you haven't touched the floor yet. He lands on his back. And you're thinking, right, well, I've seen, you know, John Morrison, or in particular Kofi Kingston, get out of this. All he's got to do is get to the steps, or, you know, find a way of getting off his back, back into the ring without both feet touching the floor. And he has that same realization. He's not eliminated. He's double checks. Nope, both feet didn't hit the floor. And he's like a turtle stuck on its back. And he's like wiggling about and hopping about. And he moves about 3 inches whilst trying to hop about. And he goes, I've got it. Does a sodding kip up. I genuinely guffawed when this happened.
This was funny. This was funny. Yeah, really, really, really good. Like, God bless somebody inserting a bit of crack into this wretched stipulation, because this was proper funny. Laughed out loud funny.
Yeah, credit to the Theory, who really sold the, got it, the moment. Yeah. Kip up, the referee just stands and looks at him and goes, I mean, you're eliminated.
He had his shite bulb moment.
Yes, exactly. So I mentioned earlier, Pete Dunne, Kushida, they want to find out who the best technical wrestler is and beat the crap out of each other in the middle of this match. Then start going for submission holds. Kushida is going for a hoverboard lock. I think Pete Dunne was going for some sort of triangle choke or something. And they both tumble over the top rope, go out, still continue. They don't really care, let's be honest, about the battle royal. Continue fighting on the floor. Referees have to separate them. But those are the 5 men who, couldn't be simpler, didn't qualify for the gauntlet match next week. The winner of the gauntlet who will face Gargano on night 2. It could not be simpler. So anyway, the final 6 are, see if I can remember this, Bronson Reed, Leon Ruff, Swerve, LA Knight, Cameron Grimes, and Dexter Lumis, who, oh my God, he just stood in the corner for the majority of this match.
That was funny, wasn't it?
No, I hate him. I hate this character. Anyway, Leon Ruff, Swerve Scott, they will start off the gauntlet next week. Of course they will. They brawled and brawled and brawled and then eventually got eliminated by Bronson Reed, who was then taken out by L.A. Knight. So Reed will come in third in the gauntlet. Couldn't be simpler. These guys, it could not be simpler. So final 3, L.A. Knight, Dexter Lumis, who again had just stood in the corner for the majority of this match. And one, Cameron Grimes, baby, to the floor. Well, he went to the floor next because he tried to bribe LA Knight and Dexter Lumis. He was counting money. He divided it up equally. And then he got chinned by him and hoyed out. Devastating this for me.
It was the highlight of the match outside of the Austin Theory kip-up, I think, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Cameron Grimes maximising his minutes.
Just put the belt on him. Put any belt on him. Make a belt. Give him the bloody $1 million belt. I don't care. Put a belt around that man's waist. And then it was Dexter Lumis versus LA Knight. 2 men who probably know each other pretty well from their time in Impact. I don't know if they crossed over. I assume so off the top of my head. Samuel Shaw and Eli Drake. But LA Knight went out through the middle rope and managed to eliminate Dexter Lumis, who just looked grumpy, as he always does, and expressionless, basically. And LA Knight wins the Battle Royal. LA Knight will be the final entrant in the gauntlet match, and he confronted Gargano post-match. What do you reckon to this finish?
I mean, it's safe to say I was surprised. On the preview yesterday, when you're asking us to name me the match that's eventually been won by the guy we forgot in LA Knight. So, yeah, surprised, I guess. It's commitment to the push. Or is it because he's lost his only singles match against Bronson Reed? This is 50-50 stuff, unless you force yourself to forget.
Well, he actually, ironically, is 50-50 in singles matches, because he won that first one when Bronson Reed came out wearing his jacket.
Oh, he did. Yes, you're right. Sorry.
But yeah, his first genuine challenge, he lost.
I felt his first hurdle, didn't he? This was it. So, great review, because I think what you've done is highlighted the stuff worthy of our time, and the rest was a whole lot of nothing.
It was your basic battle royal stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it'd be generous to say that this did like a good job of telling stories. I know that it, like, even the Kushida and Dunne stuff, which you know, we picked up on, we spotted last week, they both called themselves the best technical wrestler. So you knew that the match was coming. To happen at TakeOver off the back of one little scuffle here feels a bit rushed, doesn't it? It feels a bit like, shouldn't William Regal be putting them in a like exploding crocodile ladder match first to qualify for a TakeOver match? I don't know. Like, it just feels a bit too soon. The best spots were the ones we've already gone into detail on. And the, I don't, like, what is it? So you got Reed, LA Knight, Swerve, Leon Ruff, Cameron Grimes, and Dexter Lumis.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your six? I don't know, it's not very exciting, is it? Like, Cameron Grimes winning is potentially quite exciting. Grimes and Gargano would be piss funny. Like, both of them trying to out-cheat each other.
Yeah.
I think could be really quite entertaining. Lumis being there just lingers over the whole thing like a bad smell because you just worry that it's going to be him yet again. That's the story that they've continued to tell with I don't know. I don't like this mid-card scene at all. I think that didn't help this Battle Royal. I didn't feel terribly inspired by the people in it to even get a shot at Johnny Gargano. They've not done the work fundamentally. If they had, you wouldn't have had such a contrived, daft story in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
They've not effectively built a program for Gargano.
So it felt like a bit of a damp squib of an ending to NXT. And then Io Shirai storms out. She's had enough. She's not having this anymore. Storms out, grabs a microphone, cuts this promo in Japanese. Raquel Gonzalez comes out. There's referees, there's wrestlers, everyone's trying to separate them. But of course, big show closing brawl, also featuring Io Shirai leaping off the top rope with a crossbody. She stands tall. She's the NXT Women's Champion. She will face Raquel Gonzalez in a week's time at NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver. This sent me home very happy.
Yeah, this was awesome. As we kind of alluded to earlier in the review, totally different to the, you have to understand the differences between when they do a show closing brawl to fill time or to lazily build to something and when it's actually earned. And they worked really hard for this. They've done a good job with Shirai and Gonzalez in general. They feel like equals. And yet, though Gonzalez feels almost inevitable in her ascension, Shirai, as a babyface champion should, who has beaten everybody else should, isn't having that. She's not having that at all. And she's not just saying it, she's showing us too, you know. I really can't say enough good things about this. A spectacular spot, because I think that's just that reminder that away from all the fire and the fury of all the backstage scuffling, Shirai's this elegant genius of the sky. Let's not forget that, you know. Like, you don't get to be the genius of the sky when you're getting hurled through walls or beaten up in corridors. You get to do it when you're in the 20 by 20 where you belong in a wrestling ring. So I love that was the way it ended too. Bang into this. The opener was good, but Shirai Gonzalez was the best built thing on the show.
Yeah.
It's the best built thing on TakeOver. It's the best, likely going to be the best match on TakeOver. It's got the best outcome. It's not just a 2 or 3 month feud built. It's nearly a year long Raquel Gonzalez project that's going to be seen through to fruition. They've done good work here. They really have. We're not just here to bash this product. Like, they've done really, really great work with one of the best possible combinations of a match they could come up with out of everybody on that roster. I can't wait for that. I cannot wait for this match.
Especially considering their track record with Io Shirai, who has great matches and does great, like, underwater promos. But for the most part, they just go, oh, bollocks, there's a takeover in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You're fighting her and she wants to be the champion and doesn't think you deserve to be champion. I'll do, innit? Like, this has been, we can plot this 6 months ago from when we were sat there saying Raquel Gonzalez should challenge for, if not become, the next NXT Women's Champion. So, yeah, wonderful stuff. And I've been learning, everyone wants to improve themselves on lockdown, and I actually have been learning a bit of Japanese, and I translated the promo she cut. Lol, you think you're hard throwing me through a wall? I put a bin on my head and jumped off the top of a cage. Good to know. Right, one final thing to finish off here, and that is decide who won the Wednesday Night War this week. Was it NXT or was it Dynamite? Which way does your vote go, Michael Hanflett?
My vote went to AEW Dynamites. I've actually been able to get Sidgwick's through our back end.
Oh, good.
So I had a look. Obviously, he's, as you kind of alluded to at the start of this podcast, he's writing the ups and downs article for the website today. So I went in, I had a look, and the article is labelled 0 ups and 12 downs on AEW Dynamite, which is weird. Mm. But I know that he detests NXT even more. So somehow, on a Dynamite that he's given 12, I think that's harsh. I thought it was a good Dynamite myself. On a Dynamite he's given 12 downs to, he's actually said, please still vote for AEW. So he must have thought NXT was even worse. So it's another Dudley Boy sweep. But I think I look forward to doing that review later because I think he's been a bit harsh, to be honest.
Exactly.
I know that he's always got this chip on his shoulder about Cody, but I think he's been harsh. Good Dynamite, IMO.
Well, the Twitter poll does not reflect that. It actually went 85% in favour of NXT. April Fool's, of course it didn't. He went 70% for AEW Dynamite. But it was a good NXT, just maybe wasn't quite as good as AEW Dynamite. Another victory for them. But of course, last goal winner next week. So there you go.
That's it. It's the last goal wins. Even if it was, they're going to fire wide because they're putting it on Peacock. Nobody's going to watch it on USA if you can get it without the adverts on the thing that you already subscribed to.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like Brian Alvarez's last tweet, AEW, 800,000, NXT, 6.
But let us know your thoughts on both shows at What Culture WWE. Watch there. You can follow all three of us. We'll have Sidgwick on for the AEW Dynamite review like he'd missed that. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Willie Wilborn and Hammy Hamflett on Radio Phone FM.
You're giving me flashbacks to my radio days.
This is your Roderick Strong wristband moment, isn't it?
You can follow him at Michael Hamflett, follow Sidge at M Sidgwick, follow me at Adam Wilborn, follow us all at What Culture WWE, and make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from. The AEW Dynamite review will be up, I don't know, later. It's a bit of a busy day in the office today. It's a bit of a busy month from now onwards, basically. It's a pretty busy. Pretty busy, but it is very much one of those things where I can't sit there and go, oh, wait, you teacher? You think you've got it hard? I've got to talk about wrestling.
Thing is with teachers, they've got diaries where you just have like different days. So like Tuesday, or like double maths, Wednesday, got to get the paperwork ready for English, so. Our diary is just one giant word that says wrestling now. Monday, yes. Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then it starts again, wrestling forever. And every single page, that's it. You don't need to detail what it is. You just know it's happening at you.
But anyway, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling because we'll have previews and reviews, of course, of TakeOver, Stand and Deliver and Dynamite and WrestleMania. And April's a good month to be a wrestling fan, let's be honest. Right, this has been the Wednesday Night War review of NXT. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us and we will see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.